And thanks for being in the service. Okay. At this time, I would please give a warm welcome to our 10-minute speaker, Suzanne.
Hi, I'm Suzanne. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, I got bamboozled into this, so be nice. Okay. I'm going to start off by reading out of Daily Reflections. Just because it will kind of calm me down a little bit. And Daily Reflections is a book. It's like your out of your Bible Reflections, but it's our big book Reflections. You read it daily just to kind of keep you grounded and to remind you to kind of focus on. And today's August 29th. I choose anonymity. And I would pick, it would be the hardest word on today because I'm going to read it out loud. Anonymity. We are sure that humility expressed by anonymity is the greatest safeguard that Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. That's in 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 187. Since there are no rules for AA, I place myself where I want to be, and so I choose anonymity. I want my God to use me humbly as one of his tools in this program. Sacrifice is the art of giving of myself freely, allowing humility to replace my ego. With sobriety, I suppress that urge to carry out to the world. I am a member of AA, and I experience inner joy and peace. I let people see the changes in me and hope they will ask what happened to me. I place the principles of spirituality ahead of judging, fault-finding, criticism. I want love to carry in my group so I can grow. That's our daily reflections if you guys didn't read them today. Okay, like I said, my name is Suzanne Dawson. Sorry, Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 12/26/12. And what it was like, what happened, and where I'm at today. I started drinking when I was 12 years old, and probably a little bit earlier than that, being Catholic, you know, just having the sacraments, and, you know, that's no way triggered me or anything. But what triggered me was having brothers and sisters that were 10 years older than me. And they'd be in the driveway, and we'd be, you know, at the river, we'd be at the pool, and it was kind of cool. They would be drinking, and they're like, hey, you want to try some? And I wanted to fit in so bad, so I'm like, yeah, I'll have some. That sounds good. And then all of a sudden, I felt at ease, and I was the cool little sister, and I could hang out with them. And so it turned out, you know, just to kind of get rid of them, you know, just to be accepted. You know, and I'm like, I like this. It gave me that good feeling. But it kind of stumped me. Now I look at it, kind of stumped me from actually growing and learning to be around people, because then I had to have it. As I got into high school, it's like to do social interactions and stuff, I wanted to have a couple drinks, a little party, you know, I could talk more, I could be funny, I could, you know, be all those things I wanted to be. And it worked great for me through high school. Then it got to the point I was going to high school just to find out where the parties were on Friday. And I was like the party girl. I had a mohawk. I was a punk rocker. I had bondage pants. Then I was heavy metal. I was everything crazy, you know. I always wanted to be something different, you know. And I think that's what drinking did for me, too. It allowed me to, I thought it let me express myself. But I was just really rebellious and very self-destructing, you know. You know, when something good was going to happen, I would drink and my opportunity would go away. I had a full ride to college, and my sister said, if you don't get married to my first husband, if you don't get married, I was 17, going on 18, she goes, I'll pay for your college education. And I thought I was ready to be married and have a kid and stuff, and I didn't, and because I could go party, I could have fun. So, I mean, I lost so many opportunities. So by the time I got 17 years old, I was pregnant and got married, went to the Marine Corps with my husband in North Carolina. And it was pretty awesome because we could drink in North Carolina at 18. So I'm like, woo, I'm away from my parents. My husband likes to party. I didn't have, you know, really a lot of responsibilities. I didn't have to clean my house or my room anymore. As a little kid, that could go to bars and could do all this fun stuff. So it was fun for a while. And, you know, and then bad things started to happen. Go past that story real quick. By the time my son was 6 years old, I had a baby when I was 18 years old. And got married. I lost custody of my child when he was 6 years old. And I could have fought harder for him. And it's one of the biggest, I think it's kicked me off to my major, major alcoholism. I fought for him for like a year, but my ex-husband had all the money, all the resources, and I didn't. anyways, I lost custody of him, and I think, and it was due to my alcoholism, and I had started using speed at that time. And I had to work a few jobs and take care of him and do this and do that. And so someone introduced me to methamphetamine. They're like, wow, you can do all your jobs and go to school and clean your house and be a good mom. And that worked for a long time. And I could go dancing till 4 a.m. and then get up and work at 8. And I lived that lifestyle for a very long time. Then I met my new husband in all this. And he liked to party. So I'm like, wow, I'm going from one party to another. This is, you know, alcohol the dream. I'm like, I don't have to do anything. I'm kind of pampered. This is awesome. And then I found the real alcoholism started setting in. The blackouts, the fighting, the crashing cars, the getting arrested, the sketchiness of all of it. It wasn't so pretty anymore. But I always had, we always had enough. My husband always, he's never not worked. And we always had enough money for me to clean it up. Man, we had the perfect lawn and the cute house, and I could, you know, I had the money to look good on the outside, but I was a wreck on the inside. And that's good when you're in your 20s and in your 30s, but when you get to your 40s, you don't look so good if you're partying and drinking like that, and you're throwing up all day, then you're going out to the bars, you're swollen, you're fat, you're, you know, it's not so cute anymore. And so through all of that, the thing that happened, and people say, what happened that brought you into the rooms? I had went into the rooms when I was 20-something because I had a domestic violence charge. I was shooting a gun in the house. My husband was sleeping, and I called the cops. And I said, he's beating me, come get me. And in New Mexico, they have to take somebody in if you call. And I was just stupid and drunk. And they got there, and he sounded asleep in bed. And we had two babies in cribs sleeping. Then he came up. He's like, what the hell's going on? And I'm like, oh, they're like, you've been beating your wife? He's like, I'm sleeping. I have to work at 6 or 7. And he goes, you're not taking my wife to jail. You're not taking my wife. So we had a big argument with everybody, and they took us both. So I had to call a friend to get the kids. And he got bailed out, and I didn't get bailed out. He let me sit there. And so by the time we went to court, they dropped all his charges because I told them I was drunk, I'm stupid, whatever. And I had a really good attorney, and I dressed in a polka dot dress and pulled my hair back, a little ponytail, and I looked all innocent. And the judge is all, we're going to dismiss it this time because he said it was a lover's quarrel. And it won't go on your record. And so I got very lucky, and I should have learned from that. I mean, there's so many other things, drunk logs, that you guys, I only have 10 minutes. But then it got to the point, the second time I got arrested for DUI. And I was in Orange County. I was coming off the 57 onto the 91, the curve, and I was changing the station on the radio. And the cops were coming up behind me, and I'm like, oh, I better get over. They're going to pull somebody over. I better get over one lane. Yeah. And boom, right behind me. I go, oh, I got to get out of this guy's way. And he gets over. I'm like, well, shit, I got to really get out of this guy's way. Get over one more lane, and he's still behind me. Man, pull over the car. I'm like, oh, shit. And so I got my first DUI, and that cost me like $10,000. And it was humiliating. It was crazy. I did start going to AA then, but I was pissed off about it. I was not going to pay the dollar, but I'm like, I'm paying a lawyer. I don't want to be here. This sucks. You guys are all drunks. I know I'm a drunk, but I'm having fun still. I don't belong. I never felt like I belonged. I never looked at the similarities. I always looked at the differences. And but when I was there, when I was ordered to be there, I think some seeds got planted in my head because I did come back on my own this last time. And the last time what happened, oh, as I say, everybody asked me what happened. There's so many things that happened. It wasn't just the one thing. Last time I came in here, I went to a Christmas party on December 23rd at San Luis Obispo Country Club. My husband's manager of a car dealership. And he was drunk already by the time I met him there. He started cussing out the DJ, sent the band home. And I'm sitting there, oh, my God. And it was so always giving me so much anxiety. It's like, oh, my God, how's he going to act? How am I control him? I try to always control him. Then I get anxiety. Then I had already had probably, I was classy. I had like a box of wine. I didn't even drink bottles of wine anymore because you can get 3 bottles in a box. And so I had my almost a whole box of wine getting ready and this and that. And by the time we left there, I don't remember how we got home. I know he drove, and I got out of the car. And I only know this because I did research about 3 days later, because I'll tell you why. I guess when I got out of the car, I think my heel got stuck on the side of the door, and I did a face plant into the pavement. And I cracked my face from my nose to my forehead here, and I was swollen up here, and my face was swollen here. I had you know, blood everywhere. And I passed out in bed. I had no idea what happened. I woke up the next morning. I go, dude, to my husband, I go, dude, I got sleep in my eyes. I go, this is, oh, gnarly. And he looked at me. He goes, oh, shit. I go, what? And he goes, oh, shit. Excuse my language. I go, what's up with, I go, what? I knew every morning, almost every morning of my life, at the end, he'd say, oh, my God, do you know what you did last night? Or, oh, shit. Or, damn it, Suzanne. And I'm like, what? And he goes, that's not sleep. That's blood. And I had blood caked all over my face. So we got washcloths and we were wiping it off. Anyways, I had a concussion for, I laid in bed from the 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th. And I laid in bed. I couldn't even move. And I was doing everything. And I'm a caregiver. I'm a CNA. And that's what I did for people in skilled nursing. I took care of people. And I go, there's no way in hell I'm going to the doctor. I'm not having this on my record that I'm a drunk. How embarrassing, and they're going to raise my insurance. I thought it was like a car accident or something. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. So anyways, I kind of pampered myself, got back, you know, whatever. I told my work, I was supposed to work all, it was Christmas. I was going to get paid double time. I was all excited. And I told them I had tripped over, you know where you park, the little bumpers you go up against. I told them I was shopping for Christmas, and I tripped over, and I had bags, and I hit my face on the pavement. So those are some of my lies I used to tell. And I go, I'll never drink again. This is awful. My God. And this was one of the worst times because it hit me in the face. Anywhere else in the body, you can cover it up. You can wear a jacket, a sweater. You could handle it. But it was, I couldn't hide it. It was my, straight in my whole face. And, what was I going to say? So Christmas came along and my mom was dying. I was going to tell because his mom's here today. My mom had been passing away. She had cancer about 8 years and she lived with us when we lived down south. She moved in with my sister. And she was had cancer. We all wait for her. You know, she got okay, healthy for a while. But at the end, she got really sick. And so I had 6 months sobriety. And every day of my sobriety, I call her at first. I said, Mom, I got 1 day. Mom, I got 2 days. And her voice was pretty normal. And then at the end, she kept saying, she'd call me if I didn't call her, Susie, how many days do you have? How many days? How many days do you have? I love you. And it made her so, it brought her so much joy to know I was sober. Because I'm the baby. And we buried my mom on her on my 6 month exact, when I got my chip, on my 6 month sobriety date. And I wanted to bury my chip with her, but I didn't go to a meeting, obviously, because I went to the funeral. I'm like, man, I wish I had my 6 month chip so I could bury it with her. I go, but I know she's my guardian angel. She sees everything. But it meant so much to her. And I think that's what's really helping me stay sober now, is I know my mom's watching over me. And she waited for so many years. I drank for 33 years. She waited for so many years for Susie to get okay. She didn't want to leave this earth until I was okay. And I think she finally thought she's okay, because she held on for so many years just by a thread, waiting for me to get okay. So then I feel like I have a responsibility not to let her down. And I got goosebumps because she's here with me right now. But anyways, so that's kind of what happened. Anyways, I missed her last Christmas because I would not... She lived down south, and I didn't want her to see me all banged up because she already was stressed. She was almost ready to pass away. So I missed last Christmas with my mom, and the whole family went except me. So I was laying in my bedroom with the curtains shut. And like, the 2 days before, I'll never drink again. I'm all bashed up. And I had a glass of wine and a straw because my lips were eyes all swollen together, drinking out. And I'm thinking to myself, this is insanity. This is what they told me in AA. It's, you know, beyond... Not what we don't know why we do what we do. And so the next day I go, you know what, I'm not, and I had one glass of wine. I go, oh, how glamorous is this? Having a glass of wine, my face is smashed in, my mom's dying, everybody's over there, it's Christmas, I'm feeling sorry for myself. So the next day, I didn't care how I looked, I got up and I went over to in Aurora Grande, the Serenity Club, and I lived maybe 2 minutes from there. And I went and I sat in the back of the room against the window and I sat on my hands. And some of you heard the story before. I sat on my hands because my hands were shaking. And I'm like, wow, dude, that's crazy. I know I'm an alcoholic, but I didn't think I'd ever be that kind of alcoholic where you have withdrawals and you shake. I mean, barfing all day and shaking in bed is okay, but when I was sitting there trying, I didn't feel too bad. So I was sitting on my hands for 9 days. And on the ninth day, I lifted my hands up from under my thighs and they weren't shaking. And I just felt this, okay, this can be done. This is pretty awesome. And I haven't drank since. And what I'm doing today to stay sober is I give back. Oh, at 4 months, an old man found me. He's almost 80 years old. And he said, "You're full of shit," after a meeting. I go, "What do you mean you're full? I'm full of shit?" He goes, "Oh, you're happy, joyous, and free." Uh-huh, yeah, right. He goes, "You really want to get and stay sober?" I said, "Yes." And he goes, "And work with me." I called him every single day till we went through the whole big book, all the steps, everything. And if I called him a minute after 8 o'clock in the morning, he'd hang up. He said, "I'm going to hang up on you if you call me after 8. That means call me tomorrow when you want to get it right." And I needed that. I needed, and he was in the military forever. He was a lifer in the military. Anyway, so he found me, and he, you know, and made me work. And now that's how I work with my sponsees. I don't take no crap because I was the biggest bullshitter of all. And he wouldn't take my bullshit. I could talk myself out of any situation my whole life. But anyways, I did that. So now I work with people, and I like to give back. I feed the homeless every Thursday, me and my husband, at his car dealership on the side lot. We have people that come in out the creeks in San Luis Obispo, and we make food, and I have a couple ladies in the program that help. They'll bring all kinds of food, this or that. I've been doing it for 3 years now. And me and Kimberly, my sponsee back there, we handed out sandwiches last week. We made 40 sandwiches, and we go drive around San Luis Obispo and just hand them out to people who look hungry with desserts. And a lot of stuff's coming in from people that are in the program. Our bread guy donates bread and desserts, and then, you know, people start, you know, giving stuff. And, you know, it makes people, you know, you can't outgive God, and you can't outgive society, you know. And people, they go, "Why do you do that?" I go, "Because it's keeping me sober." And I have to do those things to stay sober, and it's working. So thank you for letting me share. And now we have our beautiful Dixie. I had a horse named Dixie, by the way. All right, thank you so much.
Suzanne, that was awesome. At this time, I would like to invite Josie to the podium to read the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are to the group as the steps are to the individual.